Welcome to the Morning Phillip series, co-sponsored with the Bush Foundation and the NUMAD Group, hosted here at the garage. The purpose of the Morning Phillip series is to discuss philanthropy, civil society, and community. It is an opportunity to have a conversation with good people doing good things creatively and collaboratively. The format is a conversation, not a presentation, a dialogue, not a pitch, two chairs, a table, and a community of interested people. And today we are pleased to have with us a national figure, an award-winning producer and journalist, a member of the Navajo Nation. The NUMAD Group would like to extend a special thanks to the Cheeseman Center for Sound, Barefoot Dance Studio for chairs, Scott Sumner with Sumner Law for brewing coffee, Tamora, Kelly, Chelsea, and Ted for setup. We want to thank the members of the garage for letting us use your workspace, the Bush Foundation, and for everyone here for joining us at 7 a.m. Please join us on Facebook, engage in the conversation at hashtag MorningPhillip. Now, with all that, please join me in welcoming the host and producer for National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
You actually arrived Monday.
I got here on Monday. My plane was delayed, came a couple days early. My first time to South Dakota, so I was really excited to come and wanted to see what I could in a couple days, so fit everything in as much as I could on Tuesday.
So what did you think?
Or
what did
you think? I love South Dakota. It's so beautiful. The people here are amazing. It's great to be able to see a lot of the areas that and meet people that, you know, we've been reporting on for years, and just to see some of these sites in person was a great experience.
So I hear you went to, you were at Keeley Radio, and
you did
a shout out.
Where else did you go? Native Radio rocks. It's just great to see how important radio is in Native communities. Not only is it entertainment, but a lot of times it serves as the source for news information and emergency preparedness, because a lot of communities in Indian country are rural and they rely on the radio. And I think it's just so great to go and see it in person.
So you visited Keeley.
I did.
You did a shout out. And
I did.
Where else did you end up on? Yesterday, I guess it was Tuesday.
So after that, I went to Pine Ridge Reservation, I toured a little bit. I stayed in Custer overnight. I toured a little bit in that area, went through Wind Cave National Park, and I get up early anyway. I'm always up at about 4 o'clock, go work out, so I'm an early bird. And it was so great because wildlife early in the morning, buffalo are by the road, tons of deer everywhere.
That's right, you had an experience with a buffalo yesterday?
I did. I saw some in Wind Cave National Park in the distance, and I thought, oh gosh, what a great photo. My family will love this. So I'm about to get out of the car, and I hear like this grunting. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a buffalo like standing right there. And he was, I didn't see him because there was like a plaque. And so he was really going to town scratching his horns on the plaque, and he was making that noise. I didn't even notice him, so I'm glad I didn't get out of the car.
National Native News, at National Native News, you distilled down social, economic, political, and cultural issues of Indigenous people worldwide. And every week, you do that into a 5-minute segment. Can you talk about how you do that?
So National Native News is a stringer-based program. So we have reporters across the country, and in Canada, we've had stories from Australia, Latin America, anywhere where there's Indigenous communities, we've had reporting on. And so people will either pitch me a story, South Dakota Public Broadcasting, work with a lot of the reporters there, so somebody will say, hey, there's a story going on here about Bear Butte. Would you be interested in that? And so they'll send me stuff, or I'll see a story and I'll ask somebody to cover it. And then, of course, I get to go out into the field and do my own reporting oftentimes.
And as people pitch stories to you from around the country or world, what happens to the stories that have merit but don't get on to National Native News?
So a lot of times we'll do social media promoting them. We use our website as well. So if there's a story that doesn't make it on air, then that's an area where we can still promote somebody's work.
As host and producer, is this what you imagined you would be doing when you started your career? Because you started in TV.
I did. I was a commercial television reporter, one-woman band reporter right out of right out of college. And no, I didn't. I wanted to be on TV, and I wanted to, be on national news, one of the morning shows or something. And it just turned out that I decided to start a family, and radio has really allowed me to have a family and have a career at the same time. And so it's, and then just focusing, being able to focus every single day our work on Native communities, because I think that's a true blessing for my job as colleagues. I do see a need for Native journalists to be telling stories, but on all levels, not just the Native press, but also in newsrooms across the country, and also to be managers of newsrooms, because like I said, it's a blessing that I get to report daily on Indigenous communities, where a reporter who's at non-Native media may have to struggle to fight to pitch their stories to get them either on air or on television or in the newspaper. So I see our work as Native radio as an avenue to benefit tribal communities.
Will you spend some time talking with us this morning about why that's important? Why is it important that Indigenous people report on issues?
Well, we know our people, we know our communities, and we have a perspective that's different. And I always like to say that, yes, I am a journalist, so I am objective. Yes, I care about Native people and communities, but that doesn't give me any kind of special access. I get told by tribal leaders, no. I get told by community members, no, we don't want to talk about this. But it's, we have a different perspective going in to see a story. For instance, I did a lot of coverage on the Gold King Mine waste spill in the Southwest, and that made international headlines because the water had turned this musty, weird color. And so a lot of people were going in there talking about the environmental impacts, but Native journalists go into the Navajo community and talk about how devastating this was because people weren't ready, had no alternative for using that water because it was a source of how are we gonna water our animals, how are we gonna water our plants, and then also the cultural aspect of how much it hurt people in that area because corn is so important to Navajo culture. And so to see your corn dying because it's not getting water was such a hurtful thing, because not only is it a source of like nourishment for your body, but also a lot of people for their soul, because it's part of their tradition.
Do you think that there's a disconnect, or there's just, we just don't understand? Non-Native people, reporters just don't understand? Or where do you think the disconnect is in reporting and capturing stories like that?
So a lot of times, like I said, our program's stringer-based, so most of our reporters are non-Native. We have maybe two or three Native reporters who work at stations or are freelancers and report for us. And I think a lot of the advice I give to the non-Native reporters is just to be a human, go into the community. Don't try to go and talk to Native communities, tribal leaders, when something is sensational or something happens that's a tragedy, because just treat it like any other day. These are your neighbors. Go visit them, learn about them. And so I think that's just the best kind of advice, is just to go and meet your neighbors.
I'm hoping you'll talk with us a little bit today about the difference between storytelling and reporting and news reporting. Would you share a little bit about storytelling as you see it, and then how that's different or how that complements?
I think it mirrors each other, sometimes in a good way, sometimes not in such a good way, but I think that, as Native people, we grow up as storytellers. And so I think that just putting that news aspect to it and getting different sides and talking to a number of different people, I see that as complementary.
When you think of, so obviously deciding to going to journalism and what you just mentioned about growing up with stories, do you go back to a story that, whether growing up, that had an impact on you that you reflect on today? Or is there a news story or something that really intrigued you, that directed you in this path?
I think for me and my family, it's just being instilled with values and culture, and my mom just made sure that we knew who we are, where we come from, never to take anything for granted. Coming from the reservation, my mom growing up and my grandmother without running water, electricity, and just the importance of being together and learning from one another, living off the land. So I think that's what I reflect on a lot. My grandmother's still alive. She's going to be 99 this summer. And so she, you know, just hearing from her when she would say, oh, every time I see a plane go across, I'm thinking my granddaughter's doing something great. So just thinking about how beautiful life is for somebody who's 99 and has had a tough struggle. As we know, there's a lot of, I like to say, you know, when we talk about Indian country, it's always, you know, these terrible statistics or these terrible stories that people want to focus on. But there's a lot of great things going on in Indian country and Native communities. And our people are resilient. No matter what Native community I go to, yes, there's problems, there's issues. But the resiliency, especially in youth, are overcoming these difficult challenges.
Will you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so Native youth are just incredible. They have great ideas. I enjoy mentoring. I enjoy spending time with young people. And when you listen to them and take their perspective, you really learn something. And I think that you see a lot of positive initiatives being started in Indian country because of the youth. Young people are taking on these projects, whether it's a community garden or a running program or a basketball tournament or something like that, and trying to do positive things in their communities.
The idea of covering positive events, positive stories in Indian country, actually across the country, I thought a bit about that in preparation for this. And would you talk a little bit about that? The news seems to focus on negative or sensationalizing events or topics. But I think you're absolutely correct. There are so many positive things in Indian country, in Rapid City, South Dakota, in South Dakota, across the country, but what we end up focusing on are more negative pieces. Why do we do that?
I think because it's what people are used to. And so, you know, they're used to seeing screaming heads on the television and fighting or you know, picking up a paper or a story or looking online, and it's just something that people are used to. And so when they hear or read something different, I feel like it's my opinion, but I feel like those last more with people than something that they read that was terrible, that just kind of, you know, crosses over their radar.
We were just talking, colleague and myself were just talking about stories and about stories growing up have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And they seem to, this thread, there's a lesson, it's something that's memorable. Most times, a story told a child, or stories that we share amongst, are positive. And the news today we insert, like you said, the talking points, or the what can we learn from that storytelling that you grew up with? That seems to be so alive in Indian country,
what can we learn as we look at world scenarios and as we learn about those?
So a lot of something that mirrors a lot in Indian country from tribal leaders and elders and community members is always thinking of the next generation. So you're always thinking ahead of the decisions that you're making today. How's that going to impact generations ahead of you? And so I think when we're talking about whether it's water, economic development, culture, it's always looking ahead and adapting and changing, because there's a lot of change that happens, and there's no way of preventing what's happening in your communities, but adapting and embracing differences between different generations. And you know, it's the same with me with my kids. I want them to have, you know, a better life than, and I had a great life. I mean, I really am close to my family, and I think that having a foundation and having a great support system, mom, dad, husband, children, that has led to better storytelling.
You grew up in a border town, right?
I've grown up in a couple of different border towns. My mom was raised in the reservation, also boarding school, but I was raised in some border towns. I lived, grew up in the White Mountain Apache area, so the border town, I lived in the border town, then the White Mountain Apache Reservation was near us. And then I also went to, grew up in Gallup, New Mexico, which is a border town to the Navajo Nation and Zuni Pueblo.
Will you share a little bit about how those communities work together and how the border towns work together with the indigenous communities?
So I think a lot of it is economics. A lot of people, you know, they go to the border towns, and that's where they shop, that's where they go watch a movie, that's where they go spend their money, maybe work in border towns. So I think that sometimes it's not often recognized that the contributions that the people, their neighbors, are making to their areas. So I think for some of these towns, I know the Navajo Nation has a human rights commission, and they do a lot of work with different border towns because the Navajo Reservation is the largest reservation in the United States. So there are a lot of border town issues, oftentimes a lot of negative issues, but I think that there is work being done to try to make positive changes in border towns, but maybe they're not often recognized.
A human rights council?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I think what you'll hear from tribal leaders and people who are involved in that is that sometimes people are not seen as people, they're seen as dollar signs. And so work is being done to say, hey, we are making a contribution. Hey, we are neighbors. How can we better relationships with the city? How can we better relationships with the county? How can we better relationships with the state? And just we're human, you're human, see us as people.
How long has that been going on? Do you know?
Forever, since first contact.
If we jump to, you grew up, as you talked about, listening to stories, you've told hundreds of stories throughout your career, and I'm going to guess before your career as a journalist as well, and as you talked about with your family, and stories are a part of life. Would you take us back to, is there a story that impressed, that you reported on that just impressed you, that maybe your most interesting story? I think this came up last night and you were going to think about it.
So I think we've done such great work. We work with a lot of great people who do a lot of great stories in their communities. But I've been a correspondent for the last year with New Mexico PBS doing some television work. And I think that the election project that we did last year was great, because as we know, the election and how that went and all the press that different candidates were receiving and different issues. And what we did is we looked at young people and voting in Indian country from young people's perspective. And we took some issues. We looked at economic development, education, and environment, and explored these different topics with young people who are making changes in their community. So more of the solution again, looking at solution journalism. I think out of that series that we did, my favorite story was highlighting the Santa Fe Indian School, where they have a 99% high school graduation rate. So young Native people from across New Mexico, from various Pueblos, Navajo Nation, the Apache tribes in the state, go to that school, and many of the kids go off to college, trade school, some prestigious universities. And what you'll hear from some of the kids in the series is that they plan to come back, and whatever they get into, whatever their careers, however that leads them, they hope to come back and make changes in their communities. And I think that's something you hear a lot from tribal leaders across the country, is that they want people to come back and be part of the community.
You shared last night that about a prestigious scholarship that you received, and how that unfolded, and how you would you share that story? I guess,
sure. So I think Native journalists, most of the ones I know are in print journalism. I could probably count the number of Native American journalists who are on television on, maybe one hand too, and broadcasters as a whole, Native radio. And so when I was going to school, I got a Chief Manuelito scholarship, but when I went to the scholarship office to talk to the tribe about, oh, well, you're getting the scholarship, what are you gonna do? I'm like, well, I'm gonna be a journalist. And they're like, well, we don't give scholarships to journalists. I'm like, why not? Like, well, most of the people who get this scholarship become doctors and lawyers and engineers. And I'm like, well, a journalist is just as important as those careers. But I think, just talking to young people, encouraging, because they're already storytellers. Most young people I know have a phone or have some kind of smart device, and they're already sharing stories. So it's getting that edge up, as getting the education on top of that. And if you are interested in journalism, then making sure you learn the basics. I mean, I learned old school journalism from great journalists. I had a mentor, a Native American, Conroy Chino, who at the time was probably the only Native person I knew on TV, except for maybe a lady in Phoenix, Arizona. And so just having somebody show you that, yes, you can do this. And I also credit Native American Journalists Association for helping me where I am today, because you can go to school, you can read books, you can learn, but once you're thrown into the fire and expected to do a story, it's a lot different. And that's what we do at the Journalists Association, is we get young people together. They work with seasoned professional journalists for a week, and we throw them in the fire. We say, here's your assignment, go do it. I mean, and we help them along, of course, but it's intimidating, and I really credit Nadja for helping me get where I am today.
Will you talk a little bit more about mentors? And last night you mentioned your mentor, and you've mentioned that in the past as well. The role of having a mentor, how important that is for people in general.
I think for seeing people that you can strive to think, oh, wow, I can be on TV, or, oh, wow, I can be on the radio, I think that's really important. And to let young people know that, yes, you can do this. Getting over maybe the first initial fear of going up to a stranger. I've had students I've worked with, and they have the microphone, take them into public, and I'm like, go introduce yourself, say hi, I'm so-and-so, I'm doing this. And I've had students like go up to somebody, stop, turn around, and walk back to me, and I'm like, no, if you want to do this, they're not going to bite. If they say no, they say no. I mean, most people are not going to, scream and yell and say, get out of my face. They might just say no thank you, or not interested, or something. So I think just that first initial step of being, for myself, for my own personal story, being thrown into that situation, to be, no, this is you, you're gonna have to do this. I think that's key. And we have students who go on and are in newsrooms across the country, whether it's native media or mainstream media. And it's great to see them, you know, doing what they love.
You're a national figure and leader to many. What do you think is the most important characteristic of a leader?
I think just being able to give Indigenous people a voice, that we look at things, for example, you can take a national headline and say, how's that impacting Indian country? How are Native communities being impacted by the world around them? How are we contributing? What's going on? And I think it's really important to be able to share voices that may not be able to be shared in mainstream media, and being able to let people share what's great in their community, and some of the challenges and how people are working to overcome challenges in their communities.
One international story recently was in North Dakota, and you spent 9 days in North Dakota in December, because that's the tourist hop, the time that tour people go to tour North Dakota. But because there is a international story there. Will you talk about that experience in North Dakota and your decision to go there?
So I think for Native press, hands down to all the Native journalists out there who are on their stories, my colleagues and myself started covering this when it was a youth-led movement. So we were covering it last summer in July when youth from Standing Rock decided to run to Washington, D.C. to raise awareness about Dakota Access Pipeline. And so we had been, you know, covering it from there, and then it turned into this huge international story. So when I went in December, it was a time when the veterans were arriving. There was a blizzard. It was like minus 20 and snowstorm. Never been to North Dakota. Live in the Southwest where the sun shines every single day and it snows in the morning, it melts in the afternoon. So it was almost like it felt like almost like maybe foreign corresponding because of a lot of the technical challenges, like a lot of Indian country, the ruralness, lack of service on your cell phone, you know, no internet. So you would see all these journalists huddled at the hotel trying to get their stories together and send them in. But also just having that, again, that Native perspective of being there from the beginning and then seeing how it progressed and to where it is today, because I don't think the reporting should stop. I don't think that there's a story that says it's over, it's gonna continue. And I think a story that's undertold there is the community building and the relationship building that needs to happen between Bismarck, Mandan, Standing Rock, Sioux Tribe, the state, the federal government, because it was such a huge event, and the movement continues. There's Native people who are onto other environmental issues. And I think that was one of the draws that I found from talking to people where they could mirror what was happening in their community. For example, talking to some young women from New Mexico who see the issue at Standing Rock as fighting for a sacred site in Arizona that is being threatened by mining. People fighting other, you know, environmental things that they see that they mirrored at Standing Rock. So it was about Standing Rock, but it was also a larger movement about talking about things that are similar in their own tribal communities.
What that reminds me of is what I've heard you say last night. You talked about solution journalism. Did I have that right?
Yes, solutions journalism. Mm-hmm.
Will you talk a bit about what that is?
So solutions journalism, I'm just getting my foot into it, but it's across the country where reporters are coming together and reporting on more of the solutions than the problems. Yes, you're talking about, you know, an issue or a problem, but looking at how a community or an individual or an organization or a group is addressing economic development. So how are people on the Pine Ridge Reservation addressing economic development? You have the Thunder Valley, you have a First Peoples, we were talking about the bus that that you drove.
Yes.
So looking more at the solutions and talking about what's working in a community and seeing if that's something that can mirror somewhere else, may not, but more addressing looking at how people are making changes in their communities.
It's doing that research and doing that, those interviews and that story, and then bringing people back around the table.
Right.
And continuing.
The conversation, exactly.
You've completed hundreds of interviews, maybe?
Probably.
Have you ever done an interview and what was shared by the person that you interviewed was just too personal, too sacred, too...
No, not for, I've never experienced that. I think for Native journalists, we see, for instance, there's a lot of stories we do on sacred items. And for us in Indian country, all we have to say is sacred items. But for maybe a non-Native journalist, they want to know, what is the sacred item? What do you use it for? What is this? What is that? Where if we just say it's a sacred item, it's a sacred item. It kind of reminds me of the military where they say, okay, here's what we release and it's classified, the rest is classified. So that's kind of where I see the same kind of deal as when we're talking about a ceremony or a sacred site or a sacred item. For us, it's enough just to say this is important and this is, you know, being sold and it's not right. So I don't think there's ever been a time where something's been too personal or too culturally shared, because there are protocols that people go through. And there are different people that will come on and feel comfortable to share what they can. Because I know we generalize a lot in Indian country saying this and that, but there's more than 500 tribes, and each tribe has their own language, culture, identity. Indigenous people are like everybody else. You can find different religions, different beliefs, traditional to, you know, you name it. There's people in every profession. When we talk, we kind of generalize, but Indian country is also very diverse, so it's really up to the tribe, the individual, and the topic.
How does that come across to you, Antonia, when there are those follow-up questions maybe from a non-Native about what is sacred? How does that come across to you?
I think...
Is it a respect thing?
I think that a lot of times people are respectful that I've interacted with. I know that there are, we talk about how oftentimes tribes don't want to talk to the press because they feel like they've been burned. They feel like they didn't get the message out that they were trying to get out, that maybe somehow it got twisted or it wasn't shared the way that, you know, they thought it should be. But in my interactions, I think that I can't think of an experience that stands out where someone wasn't respectful, or a lot of our reporters that report for us take it on themselves to go out and learn about their tribal communities and really try to do some great reporting.
Can we talk a little bit about politics for a second?
Sure.
So,
opinions.
it was talked about last night that politicians, sometimes it's difficult to get maybe a straight answer from politicians, maybe. And you had an example of somebody, the only politician I think you said that you know that provides straight answers.
I think that one of the politicians, and it's funny because when you think of Indian country, there are so many tribal leaders well-respected, that work really hard for their people. And I just think that, Chairman Frazier is very matter-of-fact and will tell you how it is, and he's with the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. But politicians are sometimes difficult to talk to, but I think that's their job. I mean, that they're public servants, so.
Well, and I just thought it was interesting that there are definitely politicians that you come across that have been forthright, and that's not, the reputation doesn't necessarily, isn't true. What do you believe are the few of the most important developing stories of this time, of our time, of this year?
I think that there's still a lot of storytelling to be done, and that's unfolding with the federal government, and that's just because the federal government has a trust responsibility for tribes. So everything that you're seeing in Washington is having an impact on Indian country, and there are tribal leaders across the country, Native organizations, advocates who are closely following every step of what's going on and unfolding, because pretty much anything that comes out of the administration is going to have some kind of direct impact on indigenous communities in the United States.
Is there somebody that you would like to interview?
Who would I like to interview?
We can come back to that.
Okay.
So what makes a good interview in your mind?
I think just having a conversation like this and just talking to people as people and remembering that you're in their space oftentimes. We have people who maybe go to the reservation and don't understand that these are people and community members and this is their home, and to ask permission to record, ask permission if it's okay that you are where you're at. And just to respect the space that you're in, and that will lead to more conversations, a better story than being pushy and trying to get a quote because you're on deadline.
What do you wish you knew when you began your reporting career that you know now?
I wish I started in radio and left commercial television at the door.
Interestingly, you've also shared how much you've enjoyed going to TV now.
Yes.
You're doing something as a recipient of some grants and fellowship, right?
Yeah, so public television, love it. Way more than commercial television. We get to do some great projects. We did the election project, which was, I think, was just such a great project. I was sharing the story about the students and at Santa Fe Indian School, and as it turned out, when we went there and I called them, they were focusing on civic engagement. So the day that we went to go interview the students, they had a mock debate. And so the students learned about each of the candidates, and someone was Donald Trump, and he had a little yellow hair piece that stuck up. Somebody was Hillary Clinton, somebody was Jill Stein, and somebody was Gary Johnson, being from New Mexico. And they incorporated humor, and the lesson was just about civic engagement and talking about voting. Indian country is, different communities turn out to vote, different communities don't turn out to vote oftentimes. So it was just really great to see the perspective of the young people who took it upon themselves to learn about voting and civic engagement. And even maybe, these young people are leaders now. They're leaders to their peers, maybe they're leaders in their communities. So it's not just a leader in the future, but it's being a leader right now in anything that you're doing.
We have a friend that says this: relationships develop at the speed of trust. And I think about that and the conversations that we've had and this morning as well. And I wonder if you have a comment about that.
I think, like I said, being objective is important to me, and trying to make sure I get different sides and different views. And just keeping your word. I'm lucky I'm the one that is in charge, so I get to decide what goes on the air. So in that sense, I'm lucky, but it's also just making sure that you say what you're going to do, and that's a lesson that I've been taught my whole life is, you know, if you say you're going to do something, then you need to stick with it and do it.
When you say you can decide what goes on the air, can you take us through that a bit? So Monday comes around, and you have to, what does the Monday look like, or how does that week, those days work so that you end up with those 5 minutes of stories?
So usually it's, unless it's breaking news, a lot of the work is the day before, seeing what's going on and talking to people and getting reporters to file stories, or me calling people on the phone, setting up interviews. So it could be, for instance, maybe our reporter in Canada has a story, and then maybe somebody here in South Dakota has a story, and then I'm finding the rest of the stories, doing on my own, maybe a telephone interview, or finding some other stories that are going on across the country. So that's usually how it works early in the morning.
Do you look for something? What do you look for, a certain kind of story, or a few different types of stories? Are there certain topics, or beyond? Yeah.
Yeah, I think just making sure you're following what's going on in the news. So, for instance, when the Paris climate talks, and then the decision by the administration, following up and seeing what people in Indian country are thinking about it, talking to people in Alaska who are at the front lines of climate change, and seeing what they think about what's going on. So taking a national headline and looking at how it's impacting Indian country.
Is there something that inspires you? What inspires you?
I think my family. Like I said, I'm very close to my mom and dad, my brother, my husband, my kids. So I think everything I do is reflection on them. So I have to make sure that, I just want to make sure that I'm making a positive impact in their lives.
You mentioned this morning and as we were walking yesterday, people are interesting. Would you talk a little bit about that? What do you mean people are interesting?
I don't like to be the one being interviewed. I like to interview and hear and learn about other people. So being in the hot seat is like, I'm like dying inside. I'm trying to do my poker face really well. But
you're doing great.
It's just great learning about people. It's just everybody has different perspective. Everybody has stories to share. And so I just think that people are really interesting.
So as you look ahead with the solution journalism, do you see any projects specifically or in certain regions that you want to look into?
I definitely would love to come back to South Dakota and talk to people and look at the businesses and the economic development that's going on on the reservations, and even looking how maybe that could be approached or used in other Native communities. I think that would be a great story.
It would be great to have you back here. What do you think is the most misunderstood?
In general for Indian country?
You can take it wherever you want. No pressure.
I just say go learn about your neighbors. It doesn't matter if it is Indian country or not. Just find out about your neighbors and learn about them, and oftentimes you'll find a lot of things that are common. You can agree to disagree, and that's really what life's about, is having these different relationships with people.
When you think of the stories that you shared and reported on, Is there a overall message, and maybe we've touched on it a bit, but the idea of people understanding more, is there just an overall theme to that's motivating?
I think it is what I had mentioned earlier about getting the Native voice on the air. That's our mission, and not just through my program, but through the various radio stations across the country, and our other program, Native America Calling, and talking about what's important to communities and the well-being, health, wellness, and really just keeping tradition and cultures alive.
And are there other perspectives of people that you think should also be on the air? It's dominated by white folks, right? That are on the air, dominant society. Are there other peoples that should have that same opportunity?
I think all people.
You talk about treat people as humans. Is that something that just comes from the family you grew up in?
I think so. My mom and dad always taught us to be respectful of adults. And so I think having that respect and respecting your elders, respecting other people around you is something that I was just taught from a very young age. And so I think that's where that respect comes from.
So you have this role, your anchor and producer. Can you give us the story of how you got to this position?
So, like I said, I went to UNM, fought for my scholarship, started out in commercial television, fell into radio, and loved it ever since. I hope to continue, and when I can't, I know that there's some young people out there who will be great and filling my shoes, and it's just a pleasure to be able to have this job. It's a real blessing, and just being here with you this morning is just great. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you for taking time. I think the things that you said yesterday as we walked around Rapid City, this morning, the words that wrote down during this and before, you talk about some really, you distill things down into some really basic concepts. People are interesting, talked about people being nice and honest. And it seemed pretty simple way of looking, a pretty wonderful way of approaching learning about people and reporting on circumstances, events, and communities. And thank you for sharing that today with us. Thanks for what you do. It was really, really enjoyable last night and this morning as people walked up and talking about, they listen to you every week and how starstruck people are. And just really appreciate you coming here and spending time and visiting with us. So we have a piece of art from Susie Kappa Art Center, Black Hills Work, Susie Kappa Art Center, that we want to give to you. We hope it finds a place.
Thank you.
And in your office or on the wall somewhere. And we just really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks. Next month, we are pleased to announce Rizelle, a 7-time nominated, 2-time Grammy Award-winning beatboxer and vocal percussionist, and a member emeritus of The Roots. Collaborating with musicians from Ben Harper to Bobby McFerrin to Angelique Kidjo to Beastie Boys to John Legend, Maroon 5. Rizelle will be our guest now, not only for Morning Philip on July 12th, but he'll have a concert here at the garage that evening. Next week, tickets will be on sale. They're free for Morning Philip. Check out your email. Thanks for coming.